This is the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Now, here are Denise and Hunter, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, everybody, to this Monday edition of Newsmakers at Noon. I am Denise Quinn.
And this is Hunter Newton.
And this is the last Monday of 2025.
Yeah. Can you believe it? We are coming up on 2026. Like it was, yesterday was 2024, wasn't it?
Yeah, I know. 2025 is all a blur. I'm glad it's just about over. Again, it is the last Monday, and we're gonna dive right in because it's been a crazy year. It's been an interesting year. There's been some highs, lots of lows, and the lows are really, really low, low. But of course, we had the big, beautiful bill go through, and with us today to talk a little bit about that and what we might look forward to in 2026 is Phil Kirpin, president of American Commitment. Happy New Year, Phil. Great to have you on this last Monday of December, 2025.
Yeah, Happy New Year, guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Happy New Year. I'm kind of like, yeah, yay, it's over.
Well, you know, I think, you could always be glass half full or half empty. I mean, to me, the biggest story at the end of the year here is what's not happening, and that is that Congress, for whatever its other many faults, actually canceled what would have been the biggest tax hike in American history. And just imagine what this week would be like if they had failed to pass that bill canceling the expiration of the Trump tax cuts, and we were sitting here looking at everybody's taxes going up thousands of dollars, the child credit being cut in half, the standard deduction being cut in half, all the brackets going up, the small business tax going up by 25%, just the list of everything that would have happened. It would have just been really, really bad. And the crazy thing is, every single elected Democrat in the House and Senate voted for that to happen over and over and over again. They didn't even bother having an alternative plan. They just voted against every Republican plan to cancel that tax hike. And so it's pretty incredible to think about the fact that not only did we avoid that, but for once they got it done early. They actually got their work done in the middle of the year. So we didn't have, you know, any uncertainty or mad dash towards the end of the year to prevent that from happening. So it's sort of the dog that didn't bark. But the really good news this week is that we're not staring at a massive tax hike next week. And, you know, that was on the books to happen if Congress hadn't canceled it.
Yeah, it is funny in Oregon, you know, much of the country is really kind of rebounding and coming back. I know I was traveling over the holidays and, you know, gas in a number of places that I was at was under $3. Not so much in Oregon and Washington, though, where it seems like sort of, you know, things are healing. They're not on the West Coast. And they're trying to blame the Democrats in these states are trying to blame Trump for this.
It's pretty strange, the Democratic strategy on energy, which has been to somehow blame high energy prices on President Trump. And you're right, most of the country now is under $3. Of course, the West Coast has its own, you know, crazy taxes and regulations that push prices up much higher than the rest of the country. California is substantially worse even than Oregon and Washington. But, you know, we've seen gasoline prices pretty much everywhere come down pretty significantly. And even where you are, you know, it's still higher than the rest of the country, but it's lower than it was a year ago, I'm pretty sure, because the crude prices come down and production's gone up. And so it's kind of all relative. But what hasn't come down in most places is electricity prices. They've been up, and they've been up by far the most in the blue states, where they have the heaviest mandates and subsidies for renewables, and they've destroyed the incentive to invest in reliable baseload electric power. Now, you've got, in the Pacific Northwest, you've got a little bit of a reprieve in that you've got significant hydroelectric generating capacity, but most of the other blue states have seen a huge increase in electricity prices, and yet, what's the Democratic message nationally? Oh, Trump is the reason that electricity prices are up. Trump's terrible bill that got rid of subsidies and mandates for wind and solar is driving up prices. Then you kind of look at, you scratch your head and you say, okay, but the places where it's increasing the most are the places that have a state version of all the stuff he got rid of. And his repeals didn't even take effect yet. And so what we've got is the Democrats have very bad policies, but they've got pretty good politics on this stuff. And they're going to blame Trump for the price increases that their own policies caused. And they're largely, by the way, also doing this on health care, blaming Trump for the price increases that their own policies caused. And so, you know, they seem to be a lot better at politics than they are at policy.
Well, I sit here and I go, you know, it's the early rumblings of anyone running for re-election in the state of Oregon is we're going to Trump-proof Oregon. And I'm sitting here going, no, please don't, because what you've done is bad enough.
And I'm sure they're not, like most blue states, they're probably not conforming to the no tax on tips and overtime, and that's going to make things very complicated for a lot of workers who have income in those categories. You have to pay state tax on income that's federally excluded, and you know, a lot of states are doing everything they can to prevent Trump from being successful so they can turn around and then, you know, blame him for the problems that result from that. But, you know, the bottom line is we had a pretty good year economically. The first quarter was bumpy, but frankly, you know, Trump wasn't really in charge for the first month of that. Literally, you know, Biden's term extended to January 20th, so 20 days of the first quarter, and then his policies really didn't have time to take effect. So we had a pretty rough first quarter. We actually had negative GDP growth, but you look at the second quarter and the third quarter, we had 3.8 and 4.3% growth, basically proving all the critics wrong. And it looks like the fourth quarter is going pretty well. We're probably going to have 3% plus growth again in the fourth quarter. And so we've got a pretty strong economy overall. Not great for everyone, obviously, but overall it's pretty good. And it's the opposite of what all the, you know, the so-called experts said. They said, and the crazy thing is, remember in the first term they said Trump's going to, remember Paul Krugman said the global economy is going to crash and never recover because Trump won and all this stuff. And, you know, they were proven totally wrong. We had the strongest income growth that we'd had, you know, in 20 years until things got derailed by the COVID lockdowns. And, you know, you could kind of blame him for listening to Fauci and Birx and so on, except almost the whole world fell for that. But, you know, then incomes under Biden fell a lot. In real terms, they fell to about $3,000 for the median household. And what did all the economists say again? Oh, my God, Trump is going to make things so terrible. It's going to be sub 2% growth. It's going to be a disaster. And then they're totally proven wrong again in the first year of Trump 2.0. So it's like they don't learn. And, you know, I'm not a fan of the tariffs. I don't think they've been a very good policy. But you look at all the other things he's done on tax, on deregulation, on spending restraint. And on net, his policies have been very good economically and have even been good for inflation. We've seen prices come down on most things, not everything. So, for instance, coffee, which had huge tariffs on it, 50% Brazil tariff, that was up 18 or 20%. Well, I mean, at least he figured out that that was a problem, that we weren't going to grow coffee in the U.S., and now they've exempted that from the tariff. So they've corrected some of the obvious blunders, and they've even on the trade front made some pretty significant successes, including getting the United Kingdom to agree to pay 25% more for brand prescription drugs from the U.S. So, I mean, if we can get a similar deal with Europe, we're going to get a lot more new drugs developed without us having to pay the full cost, with other rich countries finally chipping in. That would be massive. And so, you know, even the on the trade front, I do think there's been some pain, but it's been towards a purpose of actually getting more favorable deals, and we seem to be making progress on that. So I think it's been a pretty good year overall economically, and totally confounded the critics and the economists. And they're now again projecting super low growth for next year. The blue chip estimate is 1.9%. I would be surprised if that's not blown out of the water again.
Yeah. So it sounds like you're pretty optimistic as we head into 2026 then.
Yeah, I mean, I feel we've got the ingredients in place to have pretty strong economic growth, especially if Congress actually cuts spending, as they are claiming they will do. And we're going to see, because they've got a January 30th deadline here before we get another potential government shutdown. And they are claiming they'll actually spend less money next year than they did this past year, which even if it's a penny less, would be pretty amazing. They can almost never accomplish that. So I'll believe it when I see it, but that's what they're claiming.
Well, and I always say, you know, it's the economy. What was it, Carville telling Clinton, it's the economy, stupid. I mean, if things keep kind of chugging along this way, are you pretty optimistic about Republicans' chances in the midterms?
Well, maybe. I think, you know, you look at all these special elections, the Democrats have kind of blown them out of the water. One of the problems that happens with midterm elections and off-year elections is the party that's out of power in the White House gets so motivated and so angry because they hate the president. They all show up to vote, and it's very hard for the party that's in power to have the same kind of urgency and have the same kind of elevated turnout, because people are more complacent, they're more happy with the way things are. And so that's going to be a big challenge. Just generally, the mechanics of these kind of second-term, midterm elections are usually very challenging. But I do think that if we can get all the way out of the hole that Biden put us in for the average family. Now, Biden put us about $3,000 in the hole in real terms, which is, say, after adjusting for inflation, we had about the average sort of median middle income family at about $3,000 less in income, annual income. Now you divide that out by 12, you're talking about, you know, you're talking about $750 less in monthly income. That's pretty no, I did that wrong in my head. What did I just do? $250 less in monthly income at the end of the month and real purchasing power every month, $250 less. Now, we've got about half of that back under Trump, which is significant to get half of what you lost in 4 years back in 1 year. But the problem is, if you're $3,000 in the hole in annual purchasing power and you get half of that back in 1 year, you don't necessarily feel that you're out of the hole. You still feel less wealthy, you less able to afford things than you could in recent memory. And so I think the big challenge for Trump is getting us the rest of the way out of the hole. Let's recover that whole loss of purchasing power that we had under Biden. Let's get that and get people back to kind of all-time highs in standard of living. And if he can accomplish that before the election, I do think there's a good chance Republicans do well, but that's going to be a tall order to do on a short time frame and for people to see it and feel it. So that's the challenge, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And then obviously there's so much going on. We don't have time to dig into, you know, everything that's been breaking in the news, which, you know, anything can change between now and then. So nothing obviously is written in stone. We're going to have to wrap it up there, Phil. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Look forward to talking to you in 2026. I think it's going to be a very interesting year, and we always appreciate your perspective on things.
All right. Have a great one. Bye, guys.
All righty. Happy New Year. All right, everybody. We're going to take a break. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Cozy's New York Deli and Color Tile of Salem.
All righty, buddy. Okay. Elephant in the room. That was weird.
Yes.
So we were off all last week. And again, we get gremlins sometimes. And there was a gremlin in there. So we want to thank you for popping in there. The first part of the show, which is great, which you will be able to hear on the podcast, is our interview with the president of American Commitment, Phil Kirpin. It was a great interview talking about, you know, what we talked about 2025 and what's going to happen for 2026. So unfortunately, you'll have to go to the podcast to hear that. That will be up within very shortly after we get off the air today. So our apologies for that mix up. You know, it wouldn't be the last Monday in 2025 if there wasn't some kind of a screw up.
Well, of course not. I mean, we just, you know, I think it just epitomizes 2025.
Right?
It just, I mean, just wrapped up right there in that, 15 minutes? I mean, I'm kind of going, oh, you know, it's been that kind of a year. And again, it flies by like there's no tomorrow. I don't even know what to say.
I got to say, I appreciate our listeners. I was getting texted, you were getting texted, and it's like, okay, so we got a hold of Dave and got that remedied. So again, that is more gremlins in the machinery, and that was a screw up on our part. So anyway, the podcast, thank goodness we podcast all these things.
That's
you can
right.
always go to kykn.com under the podcast tab and look for Newsmakers, and you'll see there again with guest Phil Kirpin, who we plan to talk to a lot next year. Phil is one of our favorite guests. Again, he is president of American Commitment. And I kind of talking about, and I like, you know, when you go and you listen to the interview, you're talking about kind of the dog that didn't bark, which is the Republicans did manage to have us not have to deal with massive tax cuts that would have hit us square like a big pie in the face next week.
Yeah, and that's a good thing. But at the same time, I don't know. It just feels like we've had 11 months of Donald Trump so far, and everything that has occurred is at the executive level. And I'm sitting here going, it just feels like the Republicans in Congress and the Senate have dropped the ball to the point where, you know, this is your opportunity. You had the power to pass these things, make them law, rather than something that the next president can come in and just overturn on a whim.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a good thing. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, because again, I always feel like it was Happy New Year 2025, and then it was a big blur, and now it's like it was Merry Christmas. So anyway, we did just come back. We did not broadcast all last week. Hugh Hewitt filled in for us, which we appreciate. Everybody had guest hosts last week, too.
Yeah.
you know, so everybody, I love that because it's kind of like the guys that are and gals that are trying to build an audience. They get those chances during Christmas and New Year's. And you know, anytime the big, big national guys take off, they get to jump in there and fill in, which is cool, which is a good opportunity for them.
Yeah, no, it is an opportunity for the up and comers. And, you know, maybe, you know, locally we get to feel like we're some of the big dogs who get to take the week off too. Come on.
See, most of them have the full 2 weeks off, which may have been maybe the computer thought that we were kind of being like Glenn and the guys. No.
No, we wanted to get in here and at least for the next couple of days. Of course, we're taking New Year's off and the day after. Of course, on New Year's, we do have the big Ducks playoff game on New Year's Day as they're playing early in the morning. So that'll be in our spot, probably the post-game show by the time we would air on Thursday. But we wanted the opportunity to come in and kind of wrap up the year that has flown past us.
Right. And of course, tomorrow we will close out, have a little bit of a New Year's Eve party with Amy McLeod from the McLeod Group, Keller Williams, talking about real estate. And then, Wednesday, I kind of, there's all the year-end listicles. I love the listicles. So we'll go into some of those. But both of us traveled for Christmas. I had a lovely Christmas, got to spend it with the family, which is always really nice up in Olympia. Was watching the weather. And just before we were leaving, it was like, there's going to be another huge storm. And then, no, never mind, nothing.
Yeah, we actually, we did Christmas at home. And then went over to Central Oregon for the weekend where, you know, all of my extended family is. And with such a crew, we ended up needing two cars to do it. And we were a little worried because there was supposed to be this big snowstorm coming in on Friday.
Yeah.
And we thought we'd be traveling into winter weather. And there was a little sign of snow on the side of the road, but the travel part of it was not challenging.
Well, and I think, you know, in conversations I was having, because the week prior to that, there was that horrible, I mean, saturated soil, wicked winds, trees down. I had a couple of trees come down. I mean, we were without power for a few days. So I think everybody was just a little skittish because of that. And then, of course, all the meteorologists, and they've got, you know, bright red and warning. And it's like, oh, come on. Yeah. And it turned out, I felt bad because I had an instant, it's like, well, maybe we shouldn't travel, which I put right out of my mind. But I wonder, you know, the people who maybe said, oh, my gosh, it's going to be so bad, we should stay home. That would suck.
Yeah, and you know, there were some road issues. There is a section of road east of Detroit that actually the road is washed away, so they're down to one lane.
And I saw that.
As we're going back and forth, you know, the thought in my head is, boy, talk about a well-paying but challenging job of being a flagger overnight, because it's flagging 24/7 out there while they're doing the road work. But if you're doing it overnight, they're out there kind of on their own with nothing but a spotlight.
Yeek.
Yeah.
Yeek. That and the power company linemen. God bless them. Because they're out there busting their chops to get everybody's power back on.
And I was a little shocked as we went through Detroit, because there was some power lines that literally are trees are resting on them, and they're down near street level.
Yikes.
And you can tell a number of trees went down and were just kind of trimmed off on the side of the road. And I'm kind of going, boy, that's a little scary. And yeah, the saturated road, I'm going, you know, the biggest challenge out here is how, you know, the trees are coming down, because one, the fires of 2020, so much of those trees that have now been removed, their root structure was what was holding the ground together around the road. And all these other trees and everything else. So now that they're gone, that's all weakened and corroding with this kind of rain. And that's when you get more trees coming down, and it's just a vicious cycle. And I sit here and go, wouldn't it be nice if we managed the forest better, where one disaster 5 years ago doesn't lead to a second round of disasters now?
That seems to be the Oregon way, though. You got one policy disaster over here that leads to another, and then the fix that comes in from the progressive Democrat, Marxist, communist, take your pick, makes it worse, and then rinse, lather, and repeat. And that just seems to be the Oregon way.
Well, as long as we're Trump-proofing Oregon, you know, let's run on.
Oh, my Lord. Oh, my Lord. Okay. Well, we got a couple minutes left. Yep. I've been watching another thing, watching gold and silver prices. Holy crimoly, silver, an ounce of silver hit $81, I think, $80-ish over, I think it was yesterday, over the weekend. It's back down to, you know, 73.
A modest 73.
A year ago, it was 32. Yeah, I know.
A modest 73.
And I think gold is right around 44, 45.
And I'm sure that the
100.
Yeah, the way this stuff is going, it's got people nervous and wondering what's going on, because we have not seen a spike in precious metals this way in our lifetimes.
For the most, you know, buying silver and things like that, it was 18 to 25 bucks an ounce last year at this time around, you know, October, it was 32. So this is just a jump, which always it's like, yikes. And then you look at the dollar, because that's a good indicator on what's happening or not happening with the dollar. So that's definitely something to keep an eye on, obviously. And we'll talk a little bit more on this in the second half. But Nick Shirley breaking the internet with his, cracking Minnesota welfare daycare fraud, Somali fraud, is being perpetrated by Somali immigrants. It's had 100 million views on that thing, and it continues to climb. If you haven't seen it, it's about 42 minutes. You'll need to pick your jaw up off the ground and then kind of be like, nah, kind of suspected this. So I'm hoping that Governor Tim Walz's days are numbered.
Well, you would hope so, but I'm sitting here going, that's the other side of that coin is a lot of what's going on. You know, they've been given the ability to vote, and they've been, you know, and I just go, there's where the challenges lie, is we've created this big open door policy where, you know, states try and make it so that if they can't vote in national elections, at least they can vote in our local ones. And I sit there going, you know, what happened to the days when our politicians weren't all about 100% power in their pockets?
The servant politician, you mean, who was there just to serve because they had a servant's heart?
What?
Where are they? Where are those guys?
Well, they're few and far between in blue states. I'm just going.
Red states too.
Yeah. The more I see of these things, I'm just going, we need to get back to those days of servant politicians that weren't all about lining their own pocketbooks and creating more and more power for themselves.
I agree. And I also want to see the Republicans stop tweeting and writing sternly worded emails and take some action. Wouldn't that be nice?
Oh, come on. We can't have that happening.
That's my wish. All right, everybody, we're going to take a break to the bottom of the hour. Come on back. We will be here.
The Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, continues. Here are Denise and Hunter on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape and GA at Home.
And we are back. It feels a little weird when you take that much. I mean, I was thinking about it yesterday. I'm like, oh, I got to do the show tomorrow. And I'm like, how much I love my job. It's like I get to go talk about stuff that, you know, it's like, this is so frustrating. And we get to talk about it together with everybody. And a bad gig.
Like I said, we were over in Central Oregon. We actually, I had lived there for 12 years. I met my wife there. We got married there. Our first two kids were born there. We actually on Friday night, after getting over through the snowmageddon that never happened, we actually went out to dinner with some friends over there and, you know, had some conversations about what I do. And, you know, I kind of said, it's very kind of nice to just be able to sit there and, you know, spew off whatever I feel like.
I know. I didn't really, I'm trying to think over Christmas, no big, real big, political discussions other than I did get to say that I don't vote for politicians because their personality is sparkling and I like it. They're not my friends. I want them to do things that are going to let me keep my money and make me safe. And I don't know whether that resonated or not. I'm hoping it did. I doubt it. Yeah. But, but other than that, no real politics. It was all about family and enjoying each other's company. And it was just lovely.
Yeah, I think the only kind of, you know, conversation any of us had at that level was at the local level and kind of the way that the mm-hmm. grift operates and, you know, the homeless industrial complex and that kind of a thing, but nothing at the national level. And of course, I did have, you know, the irony of all of it. We got there on Friday and my mother actually was in the hospital when we arrived with kidney stones.
Oh. Oh, no.
So, she passed it and came home Saturday. So we got to do all the fun Christmas celebration with my mom on Saturday.
Cool.
But, you know, her and I will get into it on occasion, but when we have the time. And because of that, we didn't have the time. We weren't. So that worked out for us.
Yeah. And most people, I mean, they're not really paying attention, which is kind of to circle back to the Somali story. you think, because we're online a lot, I mean, our bread and butter, a lot of it, you know, like I've said before, my show prep, a lot of it comes from X, and it comes from trolling the interwebs looking for stories. So I'm very well aware. I'm actually shocked at how most people just are not aware of what's going on. This video from Nick Shirley breaking 100 million views, though, I mean, that's like that beats viewership, I think, on most of the major networks combined. Yeah. It's so huge.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It is, you know, it is such a generational divide. And like I said, is if I'm going to get into an issue politically with anyone, it's going to be my mother, because she approaches it from a very religious standpoint, mm-hmm. As well as my grandfather, her dad, was a Democrat politician her whole life.
Yeah.
Working up in the Olympia area. And I mean, he even ran for mayor of Seattle back in like the early 70s. And I'm kind of going, so that's kind of what she grew up with. But she also doesn't believe anything she finds on the internet. And she's against it and this and that. Because she grew up in that generation that the nightly news would never lie to you. And I still see that in her so often, and it just frustrates me. And I'm kind of like you said, these things on the internet are getting more views than all TV stations almost combined, especially now in this streaming day and age where people aren't just sitting around watching live television. They're binge watching Stranger Things or other shows, whatever. I mean, well, I'm just saying Stranger Things because that's what my cousins were talking about, or my nephews were talking about all weekend long, because it's coming out the final season now.
I lost interest in it. They took, 15 years, it feels like, to put out the between. It's going to be interesting to see, though, because CBS, I think it was purchased by Paramount, and then Barry Weiss has been put in charge of that. And I forget the name of her. She's a center-left lesbian, very tends to be fair, kind of a member of the internet intellectual dark web. She's done a lot of interesting things. I know she made the news because she punted or kicked a story out that wasn't fair. It didn't provide the White House perspective. It'll be interesting to see if she jumps and she has Nick Shirley on 60 Minutes and they talk about what he, again, 23-year-old YouTuber did this. And there was an older gentleman that had been working in that area for a number of years compiling. So you got a boomer and a zoomer together that put their resources together and blew this wide open. I mean, it is a scandal of epic proportions. So it'll be interesting to see if CBS, under the leadership of Barry Weiss, if they decide to pick this up and devote an episode or, even lead. They've got a new anchor for the CBS Evening News. This is a really good opportunity to kind of prove that when you put someone who is fair-minded in charge, you may actually get the news presented. So if people like your mom would see it.
Yeah. And that's always been my challenge, is I sit here and she'll bring up something and I'll say, but did you see this perspective of it? And she's like, well, no. And I'm kind of going, well, that's the challenge. And right now in today's news atmosphere, you have to dig deeper than the headlines. Yeah. And unfortunately, so many people don't. And that's where so much of this gets so convoluted. And you get the things like, well, how can you support Donald Trump? Well, because I'm not caring about him as a person. I'm not going to go out and hang out with him.
Right.
But his policies are better for me. And I won't even dig into the whole Epstein back and forth at this point, because it's been such a train wreck.
God, yes. Yeah, Pam Bondi.
Uh-huh.
So now speaking of that, because I know when that was breaking over the weekend and conversations I have, and a lot of people that are out on X that are in government that have been working, they're like, oh yeah, this is happening in Oregon. Mm-hmm. And as of right now, Not the Bee, which is the news arm of the Babylon Bee being satire, Not the Bee being not satire, kind of broke down. There's a number of states, Washington included. There's a tweet out here from Kristen Mag. There are 539 child care centers in Washington state that list Somali as the primary language. Most don't even give a street address. I don't know how many of these are submitting fraudulent claims for state grants and subsidies, but I have a strong hunch the number is not zero.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, so,
and that to me tells you everything. When they don't have a street address, you're a daycare center. How do you not have a street address?
Well, have you had a chance to watch that video when he's going there? And it's like, where are the children? Where are the children? You have to think, are there all these This one was licensed for 120 children. It's getting $1.2 million. There are no children. There was a gentleman that he interviewed that had lived in the area, and he said this has been going on since 2017. And he said, I've never seen any children going in and out. And there's a number of them in this strip mall or this building where there's like different suites that are the luring that couldn't even spell learning. That, of course, is make the meme worthy like you wouldn't believe. But he said they'll see some like Somali men out there smoking, and they won't see any kids going in. Then there are the healthcare centers that have no patients. And then, of course, you watch the body language and them trying to keep the doors shut and hiding their faces. So this is busted wide open. This is, I think they're up to $9 billion in fraud.
Well, I just sit here and I go, and this is what happens when you allow bureaucracy to overtake the power of elected offices. You know, we get these people in power, they create these commissions and these boards and these bureaucratic entities that we have no control over, no say, no ability to decide who's even in running the thing and how the money's being spent. And they just hand out money to their friends hand over fist. And I sit here and go, we have so many great examples right here in Oregon. Going back to the liquor commission scandal, that of course that really disappeared real quick. And I'm kind of going, so bureaucrats and elected officials taking advantage of their positions to benefit them and their friends. And so when you get, you know, the governor coming out saying, we're going to figure out how we can make, you know, businesses thrive in Oregon, so I'm going to hire someone and create a new commission for it. I'm sitting here going, that's the worst thing you can do. Get out of the way. Quit wasting our money. And let's make it, you know, and let's get rid of some of these policies and create ways that businesses can easily, especially when you're talking about builders and the housing market and things like that. It's like, that's all red tape that stands in the way of prosperity.
Yeah, and you have to wonder who sort of on the inside of the government in Minnesota, because I think when this blows wide open, I think I would like to see, again, this with that, whatever Tim Walz is. I mean, right now he's using the racist card. That's all he's got. Nick Shirley is a racist, according to this guy, because he uncovered facts. Mm-hmm. So when you start throwing that card around, I think, it's pretty obvious what's going on. If that's it, he's not denying it, so he's screaming racism, whatever. The other side of it is you've got a lot of these people are very new to the country. I don't believe now that we found out that under the Biden administration, vetting really wasn't a thing. Or if it was, it was very minimal. So we don't know who these people are. And then they come in and many of them don't speak English. So how are they navigating this system? So who on the inside? This has got to be blown wide open. And like I said before the break, Republicans better get off the pot, because I'm tired of Mike Johnson tweeting that he's just like horrified. Fine, be horrified. Now do something about it.
Yeah. And that's and unfortunately, but that's what's going to cost the Republicans in the midterms. Is the inability to make the difference and do the things that actually have some teeth in it, rather than put out these I'm horrified tweets or you know, sternly worded letters. You know, they get you nowhere.
No, and you know, if it's a X a tweet, whatever it's called on there, I don't know. Maybe we'll figure a name out for what they are in 2026. But sort of the ratio on it, and people just sitting there going, yeah, enough of this. I don't care. Your feelings mean nothing. Shut up. Get together and do something. Where are the indictments? Where are the perp walks? Where are the orange jumpsuits? Where's the accountability? Where are the damn consequences? Well, because you know they will turn us in for what? A $600 in one PayPal transaction as an American? But this crap is going on in Minnesota and probably in Oregon, and we know a little bit in Washington.
Well, and that's the thing. I just sit here and go, this is it's the story we've been screaming since 2016. It's where is the accountability for these people? Where is the perp walks? I spent I don't even know how many hours watching, you know, testimonies over the last decade in front of Congress where I'm sitting there going, okay, you're lying. You know, Fauci is a great Fauci. Example. You're literally lying to Congress, where I would go to jail for lying to a police officer, and you're getting to lie to Congress and the world. And, you know, when your lies are exposed at the end of the day, there's no accountability whatsoever. That's not the way our system is designed to work.
Yeah. And so do we really have a deficit problem in this country, or do we have a massive fraud problem?
I think it's a massive fraud problem. Well, and a deficit problem. And, you know, maybe they'll, you know, put the dollar back to the gold standard or even the silver standard at this point.
Yeah. Right. What did I have somebody tweeted out? Make money heavy again, gold and silver. When I have to carry a little pouch like grandpa used to carry, one of those little plastic pouches, and have it loaded down with coin. Oh my gosh. It's so maddening. It's absolutely maddening. And a lot of people are really frustrated. And again, right, in talking to Phil, as far as what the midterms look like, yeah, it's the economy, but it's stuff like this. Mm-hmm. And if Republicans don't do anything, it's like, this is why we voted you in there. This is why you are there. Do your damn jobs.
Yep. And you know, they'll get a little bit of a boost come April and tax time when people are realizing that they are, you know, having more money in their pocket and mm-hmm. you know, taxes aren't. But well, of course, we're in Oregon, so I'm sure that, you know, the way it always works for me is I get a refund federally and then I just give it over to the state of Oregon because
and
they
you get
can
so
never
much
get
bang for your buck in Oregon.
They never get enough of my money here in Oregon.
And I just always want more. All right, let's take a break. Take some deep breaths. Serenity now. Serenity now. We'll come back on the other side. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by the Perlin Mill and Home Comfort.
All right, a little closer to home here. Coin6 broke this story. Well, broken, we kind of knew. December 24th is Christmas Eve. Controversy. Salem leaders appoint murderer to public safety position. Now, let's put this, not all of them voted to do this. It was your progressive, Democrat, communist, whatever ones. I believe it was counselors Nishioka, Nordyke, Vang, and Varney. Mm-hmm. Nordyke has since come out and went, oopsie, and stuck her finger in the wind and realized that's not a good look if you want to run for mayor. That's kind of what it looks like. So she, I think the Salem Reporter had a story about her trying to change her mind, and the comments were funny. It was like, yeah, sorry, too late. We know you. We see you. But anyway, this individual was appointed to serve on the Community Police Review Board. And this was he was arrested for the murder of a 19-year-old back in 1995. My understanding is that this guy, Hedquist, was in prison for life. And his sentence was commuted by then Governor Kate Brown, along with a bunch of others. That was extremely controversial at the time it happened. I remember a lot of pushback. Even in a press release, Marion County DA Paige Clarkson said, quote, "While I'll acknowledge that there are certainly appropriate ways for those who have completed their full sentences," which my understanding is he didn't, but anyway, "and displayed honest rehabilitation to give back to our county, this is not one of them. Our police and fire professionals have the right to expect better from city leadership." This is such a massive fail. And of course, it's gone viral. It's made national news. It's yet another embarrassing faux pas and blunder from this council.
Well, I just sit here and I go, do these counselors not recognize that when Oregon does something like this, it's going to reach the national level? And we are going to once again become the laughingstock of the U.S. because, and I sit here and go, out of all the things, you're taking someone who's a convicted murderer, and it wasn't like a, accidental murder. It was a cold-blooded execution.
Yeah.
And I sit here and go, and then you're putting them in charge of police oversight and police critiquing, and I'm kind of going, it sounds very awkward. It's almost like saying, you know, hey, you're a drug dealing gangbanger. Let's put you in charge of telling us how the police are doing.
Yeah. And then the apologist for this, well, it brings a good different perspective. It's like, so it's someone who maybe had a misdemeanor for shoplifting. Maybe that, I don't know. The whole thing is so tone deaf. It's just so tone deaf.
Have we not?
They need to be held accountable. And I believe Nishioka and Vang was newly elected last cycle. Yep. Varney, I don't know if she's running. Nishioka has a challenger from the great Manny Martinez, who's running in that ward. That would be such an improvement to get this woman out of there and to get somebody with some real common sense in there like Manny Martinez. Mickey Varney, I don't know if she's running. I know Chris Cummings is running over there. I don't know if Nordyke is in Ward 7. I don't know what's going on with her. And then, of course, Mayor Hoy is running. And so that shows you really you've got a choice there because Nordyke is running for mayor as well, between Hoy and Nordyke.
Yeah.
Seems pretty clear-cut choice to me.
Yeah, and I if you're looking for a different perspective on policing and how they're doing their jobs, I think there's a lot better options out there.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm sitting here going, you know, from my perspective, it's like the police are doing a great job when they're keeping my neighborhood safe and crime out of my neighborhoods and, you know, this and that. But you know what? I don't like to see a police car pull up behind me when I'm out driving. You know, it's like you ask me my opinion of police after I get a speeding ticket. Well, then I'm going to have something different to say than normally. So
Yeah. There is a candidate for Ward 6, Betsy. Her website is Betsy for Salem, is running against Vang. So Vang, I guess, is running. Okay. Anyway.
Yeah, I think hers was a special.
Because a lot of people are asking, well, who do we vote for? Who do we vote for? Because, again, people don't pay attention.
Vang was a special election to replace Mayor Hoy's seat.
That's right. You're right. Thank you. It's all coming back to
me.
There
it is. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, we have that great memory from, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, and we struggle short term.
So much has happened, and you have to remember that Nishioka was also behind those two meetings to basically say, yeah, we agree with the resolution that's been on the books for a long time, and let's rile everybody up. And yeah, so that did bring up, obviously, we talked about decorum and things like that, and hopefully those things will change, because there's a lot of control behind that gavel to keep things, because the decorum, that was an embarrassing spectacle as well, what happened in those chambers, and people trying to not to voice an opinion that wasn't necessarily popular in the room being shouted down and booed, and it was pretty gross.
Yeah, and I'm sitting there going, well, you know, once again, it makes me sit here and say I'm kind of glad 2025 is coming to an end, and hopefully we get some nice fresh starts next week for 2026.
Yeah, and it'd be nice to get some sanity back on the Salem City Council. And, you know, start dealing with, like you said, you know, public safety is number one. And I think that's Mayor Hoy's top priority. And that is, you know, they keep the Oregon way seems to be just throw money at a problem. And you mentioned it, too. It just is not getting any better. In fact, it's getting worse. Just looking at what's happening with homelessness and crime.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. I literally spent a lot of the weekend as disconnected as I could be. And but one of the things I did see is some commentary on, you know, Oregon spends $1.5 billion annually on the homeless crisis, and yet our homeless population has increased 50 to 60% in that time. And I'm just sitting here going, so obviously these things aren't working, and I see it on a daily basis. The litter, the trash. I mean, heck, right here at this building, when I got here this morning, there was signs that, you know, someone sat and chain smoked all weekend in our front stoop. So I'm kind of going, yeah, these challenges need to address, but we need a different method of dealing with it, because what we're doing currently in the state of Oregon is not working at all.
No. And I think with what's happening in Minnesota, I think Washington, obviously a little bit happening in Washington, and then what happens in Oregon, if this thing is cracked wide open, and there is, I think there is a lot of hunger, desire to start really rooting out the fraud, because you know it's running rampant. You know it's happening in Oregon. We've seen some of it bubble up in different stories throughout the years.
Yeah, well, and you know, we saw it, you know, nearly a year ago at the federal level when they started pointing out, you know, money being spent overseas for all sorts of weird little pet projects that have nothing to do with us. And you sit here and go, you know, this is happening locally, and I think all of us would love to see a Doge of Oregon to kind of really come in and clean up where all the mismanaged funds are. And it's why, you know, they sit there and go, oh, well, we need money to take care of the roads.
Well, and that's what happens, honestly, when you have one party rule, as you do in Washington, as you do in California and Oregon. It's not going to be the party that's in charge that's going to be digging into their own dirty laundry. They don't want to take a look at those nasty undies that are in there. And so they're not going to be looking at them. So when I know in Oregon, there are a number of citizen journalists, Honey Badger Mom, we've got Kevin Dahlgren, who actually has done a lot of work with Nick Shirley. So I think what you're really seeing is we're watching sort of the death throes of the mainstream media that nobody respects, nobody listens to. When you're looking at 100 million views on a YouTube video from a 23-year-old, that should, the mainstream media should be like, all right, that's it.
We're not doing
turn off the light. We're done.
Yeah,
good night.
Yeah. I mean, I always enjoy when a story goes big enough that it forces the local media to actually cover it, because that is few and far between, but at least Oregonians are seeing some of the truth coming out.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting. All right. We're going to have Amy McLeod on tomorrow for Real Estate Insights. Go out, enjoy the day, and we will see you tomorrow.
This has been the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Exclusively on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.